Hello, and welcome to this SearchSecurity.com podcast, 5 Ways to Avoid Security Visibility Failure. I'm Kara Gatine. Joining me today is Aaron Turner, the co-founder of Infrastruct, an information security consultancy focused on helping organizations identify how to solve some of the toughest espionage cases. Thanks for joining us today, Aaron.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of SearchSecurity.com's Security Visibility School under our Integration of Networking and Security School series, which you can visit at searchsecurity.com/guides/securityschools. Let me set the stage for our listeners. Here's how this works. I'm going to present Aaron with several important statements regarding security visibility, and he'll take a few minutes to address each one. So, Aaron, let's get started. The first statement, abandon security products that don't solve business problems. So, tell us, what determines whether an organization should give up on a product?
You know, this is probably one of the hardest things for information security staff to take a look at, because what's usually happened over time is at some point in time, an organization has gone out and made an investment to buy a tool, and that tool was brought in to do something. And maybe at that point in time, it did that something. But as the market has changed, as the business has changed, as the adversary has changed, maybe that tool is not the right thing to use. But sometimes, because for some reason, whether it's the super geek factor of security folks or just the tenacity that we have, we just don't want to give up on that tool. We don't want to give up on that bit of effort that we thought was trying to serve us in the past. And so what it really comes down to is the output of a particular tool actually valuable to the ongoing security intelligence feeds that a risk model needs to be successful within an organization? So basically the test becomes, if the data is good for security intelligence and the risk model, then keep it. If it's not, then throw it away. And it becomes hard sometimes to understand at what tactical level something is actually feeding into a good process or a good risk model. And oftentimes I've seen information security professionals reticent to throw tools away because sometimes the individual's existence in the company is solely there to run the tool. And so sometimes it's hard for us to separate that justifying your existence to run, adding value and providing value to the organization. So it's a complex process to make a decision, but it's an important one that should be evaluated on a constant basis of whether the tool is providing value or not.
Very good advice. Okay, statement number two, close the loop. Limit who has security decision-making input. So, Aaron, why is this important, and how can the size of the loop be reduced?
So, this is about this particular topic focuses on being able to respond quickly to emerging threats and being able to respond quickly to new types of adversaries that your business or your organization may run into over time, and so. What ends up happening is in large organizations, just like the old saying about being in the kitchen, the more cooks in the kitchen, you know, the worse the food comes out. The more cooks in the information security kitchen, oftentimes the worse the product comes out as well. And so while it is important to make sure that you reach out and get as much information as you can, during highly critical moments, especially those moments in time where intellectual property is being stolen or some sort of adversary is within your network that is adaptable and persistent, at those moments in time, having 15 people on a committee to make a security decision is not what you want to be doing. You usually want to have maybe 4 or 5 people that are in the room, the head of security, the head of business operations, the head of financial reporting and audit, and usually someone who is looking at the future of the business. So whatever, however you want to articulate that, the business development person or the person who monitors the strength of the business. And you want to sit down with them during significant incidents and basically lay out the situation so that they can take immediate action with you about weighing the cost benefits of shutting down the business if you need to make sure that, you need to protect account data, or being able to change the way that business is run if you're leaking data through some of your partner connections or something like that. And so if you can reduce the size of that decision-making body, basically that committee, it basically assures a much quicker road to success than if you've got this large committee that you've got to present things to. Sometimes it's hard to exclude people from that decision-making process just because in modern enterprise corporate organizations, basically, you know, people don't want to be excluded from decision-making because it makes them feel like they're less important to the business. But it really needs to come down to prioritizing who is within each loop. Now, there may be different loops for different types of situations. There may be a broader group that you're updating, you're providing updates to and pushing information to. But when you're looking to make tactical as well as strategic security decisions, whether on a reactive incident basis or a proactive strategic basis, you want to make sure that that group is nice and tight and basically is as small as possible while still doing justice to the business.
That's sound advice, Aaron. Very good. All right. Next up is statement number 3. Consider cloud-hosted security monitoring. So when should an organization consider augmenting its own monitoring with service providers?
Well, this is a touchy subject, okay, because a lot of times when people think about augmenting your own services, people think about outsourcing, right? And so I would state definitively that any organization that is cutting its information security budget through outsourcing is basically amputating a leg, and they will pay the penalty over time. So I don't think in any way, shape, or form should we be looking to reduce the information security spend through outsourcing. But I will say there are specific types of information security services that an organization can never hire for. So, for example, what we've seen in some organizations now is where people have basically, like cleaning staff or someone from the outside has brought in a 4G network device and plugged it into the network and basically has gained access that way. Detecting 4G wireless devices within an organization is not something you're really going to be able to hire for. There just aren't that many radio frequency security experts out there that you can hire your own. And so that would be something where you'd bring in and augment your own capabilities by having some sort of consulting or service partner to do that for you. Another situation is where you need to attribute where specific types of network traffic are going to. And so this is where network intelligence really gains a significant benefit by having external intelligence feeds coming in. Also, being able to do full packet capture and analysis is another opportunity to basically gain economies of scale through a service provider, just because it's very expensive to acquire those individuals and keep them on staff yourself. So I think the key to augmenting your own service is to make sure that you stay away from the outsource reduction in cost model, but making sure that you're taking advantage of economies of scale models so you can get the expertise you need to solve some of the more advanced problems that we're seeing now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, our next statement, get executive support to make necessary changes. So how does public internal support from the top grease the wheels?
Well, we've all seen what happens when someone sends out a memo or an email that states, this is the direction of our company and this is where we're going. Oftentimes, what ends up happening in some organizations is if all you're getting is the human resources employee handbook about why it's important to, you know, have a password or not surf the, you know, certain sites on the internet, the actual implementation of those policies is very, very low. A good case in point is proper use of mobile devices within an organization. If people are going to work and the CEO is using a personal device to get access to the corporate information without following the proper procedures, how in the world executive going to expect that the rest of his company is going to do the right thing according to policy? People follow their leaders, the leaders as they write it down and as they do. So it's not just a matter of having a written policy that comes from the top, but it's actually having those executives live the same principles that that are expected of everybody else. So if you can get into a situation where you have that type of internal public support, it makes it a lot easier to implement policies and make sure that you've got the visibility into what's actually happening in the organization than if you don't.
Mm-hmm. And then our final statement, pull the ripcord, jump ship yourself. So if a security manager can't affect the changes we've discussed, is his job or her job hopeless?
You know, there's been a lot of time that I've seen things over the last 15 years about, you know, how people feel about their security jobs. Back in the late 90s, information security was like this more art than science, right? And so what ended up happening is people were really motivated because it was all new. You know, it was every day was a new day. Well, come about, you know, 2003 to 2005 time frame, it wasn't so new anymore, it just became drudgery. And both the business as well as IT, as well as the security folks themselves, kind of saw information security as more a job of getting a phone call to unplug the drains. Basically, you became the plumber of the Internet, exactly. So you ended up having the dirtiest jobs, the ones that were at the most off hours, and cleaning up all the messes. And what I've ended up seeing now is that there's been much more of a balance as we as information security professionals have been able to better articulate what we can do and how we can do it versus what the business expects us to do. And so if you can manage that balance of keeping people's expectations in line with what is realistic based upon the tools and the procedures and the people that you have on staff, then you're going to be in a good situation. But if the expectations get out of balance, where people expect you to do X, Y, and Z, but you don't have the resources to accomplish that, then that's a surefire indicator of non-success or failure. Mm-hmm. And so if you get into that situation, it's time to look for something else to do. And, you know, unfortunately, many organizations don't learn the lessons of having solid InfoSec staff on staff until they leave, and then there's a major incident, and then they're left paying double or triple what they would have paid if they would have done something proactively. So I think, you know, the best thing to do is to always balance whether you have the resources to be successful versus whether you don't. And if you ever feel like the cost-benefit analysis is leaning towards more costs than benefits, that's about the time where you need to look to get out.
All right, Aaron, as we wrap things up, what does the future hold for data-driven security?
Well, I think what's going to happen over the next couple of years is that information security is continuing to get more and more mature. And as it gets more mature, there's going to be more data, more intelligence that can be driven into taking decisions. And so I think intelligence-driven security, basically acting and implementing controls on a rapid basis based upon real-time intelligence, that's going to be the future of information security. There is no more static firewall rules. There is no more static password policies. Those days are well done and gone. And so it's much more about flexibility, rapid response, quickly reacting to adversaries. And I think that's what's going to prove the success for information security professionals in the future.
Aaron, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. I always appreciate the time I spend with you folks.
Oh, that's great. For more information on our Security Visibility School, please visit searchsecurity.com/guides/security schools, where you'll find Aaron's webcast presentation, tip and quiz that accompany this school. And we have more information security podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm Kara Gattin. Have a great day.